This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Commodities. Simon Constable reports on commodities for Barron's, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, and other distinguished publications. He's in Edinburgh, Scotland. We begin with the headlines around the world about inflation and commodities. Fed weighs biggest rate rise in decades, or Fed begins quantitative tightening on unprecedented scale. That's on this side of the Atlantic. On the other side of the Atlantic, we have the UK worried about something called the cost of living. That's the same thing as the price of gasoline and the price of food. We go immediately to Simon's reporting. Over this last year, especially since Thanksgiving of last year, 21, when it was evident that something was stirring in the prices charged for commodities. It wasn't clearly a pattern. We could tell the story in terms of, oh, well, they're building a lot of houses. Or, oh, well, Brazil had a bad frost and it damaged the coffee crop. But now it looks not more than a pattern. It looks like a plot. And the plot is to cut down people's spending, which is sometimes in America called recession. Simon, a very good day to you. Well done for getting in front of this story. I begin with the wheat that you reported on, as I recall, over the winter and over the fall and winter of 2021 leading into 22. Wheat was heading higher when we last talked about it. And it was the question was, this is before the war. The question was, would it top at 11? What it's now seeing, you tell me, close to 11. Is this reflected in the food prices that you can see in Edinburgh, a cost of bread or cost of everything? Good day to you, Simon.
Good day to you, John, and thank you for looking back over the what a year it's been in commodities. We are seeing some of that in the prices. It hasn't got outrageous yet with food. And I hope it doesn't, because I don't particularly want to go hungry, and nobody else does. So wheat's now at $10.45 a bushel, and we've not really seen that with the increase in prices in, say, bread or bread rolls or things like that. But we are seeing it in the prices of other things like petrol and fuel and gasoline and all that sort of good stuff. So, yes, it's not been good. And I wish I was wrong. When I wrote all those stories about, I think these prices are going up, I now wish I was wrong and I hadn't written them.
Again, Simon, we could explain wheat on the basis of a one-off, the war in Ukraine, keeping the grain fleet bottled up in Odessa. But that doesn't explain soybeans at 1770 or corn at 760. We have other producers. Coffee. Remember how you warned us that coffee prices were going to climb? Indeed, they did from last fall. They're not as high as they could be, but we're no longer just saying there's going to be a frost in Brazil. These prices all reflect something that you just identified, petrol. The trucks that deliver this have to depend on the petrol prices. You buy diesel, we buy gasoline, and those prices are very high. Did we see this coming, Simon? Because the explanation from Washington is it's the war. Is that the same explanation you get from Parliament?
That is basically the same explanation we get from Parliament. Supply chain difficulties. A lot of people are trying to blame everything on Brexit. The people who wanted to remain in the European Union say Brexit, but we've got the same problems as America. And as far as I know, America has never been part of the European Union. And yet you would think that the way people talk. So all of this is going on, and what has happened is that the Federal Reserve basically is partially responsible for this. There's been a lot of bond buying, so-called quantitative easing, over the last decade, and that's created a lot of money in the world economy, not just the U.S. economy, but everywhere. And this is the war in Ukraine and the frosts late last year that hurt all these crops. That's just been the spark that has exploded the inflation monster. And now we've got an explosion in inflation or a tsunami or whatever you want to call it. But, you know, you can have a lot of money flying around, but and normally if you don't have too much, then the prices just stay relatively stable because there's no fuel there, if you like, monetary fuel to make it into an explosion. But this time we just had too much and it's gone utterly crazy. We put 20 pounds of fuel into a car, and that used to be something that would last you quite a while, and now it doesn't last very long at all. And I think you're seeing the same in America. You know, you fill up the car for $100 and you think, you know, that used to be a lot of money and that would keep you going for a long while. Now it doesn't.
I was in Edinburgh in 73, 74 during the OPEC crisis when there was a threat to cut off oil, or did cut off oil. At the same time, inflation was spiking at that moment. You're a younger person, Simon, so you're not responsible for remembering 73. That was before the Thatcher revolution of, say, deacquiring all those industries and also stop employing everybody for the state. And so at the time, the inflation was blamed on the conversion of Britain from a nationalized industry to a private industry. Now, looking back on it, it was driven by oil. Those oil prices drove the inflation picture that we now remember as the 1970s, Nixon, Ford, and Carter. The question.
And actually, let me jump in here too, because the oil prices are directly linked to U.S. monetary policy as well. So what had happened was the U.S. was buying most of its oil from the Middle East, and up until 1971, the world was on a form of a gold standard, and basically the U.S. didn't want to allow convertibility of dollars into gold, because that would have meant an outflow of gold to the Middle East, your Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. And so that was closed down. And eventually Nixon said, okay, we're off the gold standard now. And that devalued money worldwide. It wasn't just the dollar. It was basically everywhere. And you know, that really, I guess, kind of upset the oil producers, because it meant that the money they did have wasn't worth as much as they thought it was. They had dollars. And then we got this inflation as well. So they are linked. Yes, it was the oil price, but it was linked to monetary policy yet again. And it's a really sad thing. And it's you know, as Yogi Berra would say, it's like deja vu all over again.
We come to where we are now. There is one price that is moderating. I hesitate to say it's good news, because it means that they've stopped building new houses. That's lumber. It topped at $1,700 per measure. You tell me now it's around 500, so it's come down sharply and headed to 300. That's because of the potential of recession, Simon. That's not because people have become careful.
Oh, it is definitely not because people have become careful at all. The only part of this, this story which is somewhat good is that the pandemic's over and lumber mills are operating at a full capacity, or at least normally when they weren't for a while. The normal rate of lumber price is between 300 and, you know, maybe up to 500, and moderating between those two, usually towards the lower end. And it's done that for years, even through big booms like we saw, you know, before the financial crisis. Now it is still, you know, at the high end of that, and will continue to come down, because that we will have a recession in the housing sector without a doubt. That will happen. The housing sector in the U.S., which relies heavily on wood and lumber, will be there, and that, you know, that will be unavoidable, and that's a sad thing, because there's a lot of good people working in that industry.
I mention also that Britain is now threatened with several labor outages, used to be AKA strikes. I want to measure how Scotland is faring in the turmoil. Parliament is all twisted around whether Boris should or should not be prime minister. How is it in Edinburgh these days? Are the waters calmer there?
Well, I love it. It's actually brilliant the way you framed that, because while the world is in crisis and while there are real problems to deal with, like inflation, like potential unemployment, and the war in Ukraine and all the rest of it, Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland, has embarked on a plan for independence of Scotland from the United Kingdom. This is despite the fact that just a few weeks ago, Scotland went cap in hand to the Westminster government to say, oops, sorry, we've overspent our our allocated amount of money that we got from, you know, taxpayers, et cetera, et cetera. So apparently this independence campaign is the desire of Nicola Sturgeon is that it happens in 2023. That's next year. The Boris Johnson government does not want that to happen and will do everything it can to make that not happen. It does seem a little tin-eared to do that right now. We are in an economic crisis in many ways. It would seem better to have that in calmer times. At least that would to me. One of the things that was very interesting that I picked up when looking through stuff is that Nicola Sturgeon is saying that we want the freedom to be able to, you know, be a great country. And yet Scotland has had a heck of a lot of freedom to run itself under devolution, which is now, you know, over 20 years long. And one of the things that's interesting is that although more money is spent per child on education in Scotland, they have worse outcomes than elsewhere in the UK. One of those areas is mathematics, and that may explain the overspend in the Scottish Parliament, which is something of an irony, really.
Simon Constable in Edinburgh, Scotland. I'm John Batchelor.